Welcome to Downloadable Content. We are Alex
and SJ Herschel. Today, this is our official review of the game Nier Automata. Let's get right into it. Welcome back, Alex, and welcome, Christian.
Hello.
This is your first time.
It is. I'm so happy to be here. This is a game that means a lot to me, and I'm so glad that this could be my introduction to kind of just geek out about it and get into all the things that make this game so special.
Yeah, there are a lot of games that we wanted to get you for, like, have you join us for.
Yes.
One of them is this.
Fire
we
Emblem.
We still technically haven't done, like, a review of this game. I've talked about how much I love it and stuff, and you're the biggest Fire Emblem fan that I know, actually.
Yeah, I've played a fair amount of the series, and I definitely consider myself an overall Fire Emblem fan, so the inevitable Engage episode, I'm very excited to, I mean, either be a part of or experience, just because, like, it's one of those things that's probably just going to stick with me.
Yeah.
Like, even if the series just, like, tanks, I'm just going to be like, well, I'm along for the ride.
Well, and you're always going back and playing the older games and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
you know?
Yeah.
Like the game says, I like Ike.
Yeah. And Alex, how are you doing?
I'm good. I bought a goldfish this week.
You bought a goldfish?
Yeah, my wife has really wanted a fish recently, and so on Monday, we went and bought one, and there's actually so much that goes into goldfish maintenance. It's actually kind of insane. You'd think that you just put the fish in the water and that's fine, but it's not. There's a lot more to it than that, so I have a goldfish now. And
can I get a little rundown of what kind of stuff you have to worry about?
So I went and I was just going to get like those tanks that you see in like TV and movies where it's just like the clear bowl.
The bowl.
Bowl, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And the person at the store that we went to was like, ethically, I cannot sell you a goldfish if that's the tank you're going to buy, because goldfish can get really big and they need more water than that. So we got a little bit of a bigger tank. And then
how big are we talking? Like,
yeah, around there. It's a 5-gallon tank.
Okay.
And so this is just like, you know,
yeah, it's just a little baby goldfish. It's just a little baby goldfish right now. But apparently, like, goldfish can live for like up to 10 years and get to be like pretty chonky little fish. So we did that. And, you know, then we needed to get gravel. We got him a little plant. I'm going to get him another plant on Monday when I go shopping. Food. And then she was also like, yeah, and also I can't really sell you a fish unless you get this like pH balancer mixture that you mix into the water to make sure the pH is right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, that makes sense.
One would think that would be, you know, some sort of included price if you can't like ethically sell a fish without it.
Right.
That's a great way to like upsell you on stuff, right? I can't ethically sell you on this until you buy
and,
our entire
store.
And
I mean, like, Because Liv has wanted one for so long, and she was already getting attached after she had just chosen her fish,
that's,
I was like,
that's what happens.
Okay, you know,
yeah,
might as well go all in. And then it was, oh man, his water gets dirty really quickly, so we bought a filter, and we bought something to clean. Oh, and I also learned that, like, the more you take a goldfish out of its tank, like, the more distress you put it through.
Yeah.
Which is, like, another reason that it dies so quickly. So then I was like, okay, well, then I have to get something to clean the rocks while being able to keep the fish inside, and something to clean the inside of the tank if, like, algae growth happens, a temperature to make sure that the water's staying at the right temperature so the fish doesn't freeze or overheat.
A little bookshelf to make sure it doesn't get bored.
Seriously, though. So I went in to buy a goldfish thinking, you know, this is going to cost me, like, $20. And it definitely became more than that very, very quickly. But
wow.
I am now a proud and passionate fish owner of a little blue Shabunkin goldfish called Percy.
I was going to ask what
good
his name is.
Name.
Percy.
Yeah, nice. My wife reread the Percy Jackson in the Olympians series recently. So she said, you know what? I really want a fish and I really want to name him Percy. And yeah, she kind of gets what she wants.
So. You got that streaming series coming out, so you can like watch it with Percy and the wife.
She's so hyped. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, that's what's going on with me. So
okay, very good. Christian, how's your week? Any games you're working on? Or
it's been good. Yeah. So my wife and I live south of Provo, so we don't get to come up as often up to Salt Lake as we'd like. But we've been having fun down there. Right now, she's been getting me to get into Supernatural because that's like the show for her, and it kind of fits with the spooky Halloween vibes.
That's true.
Game-wise, been playing Spider-Man 2, man. It's good. Insomniac knows what they're doing, and it's probably gonna, you know, take me until, you know, the Black Friday sale, Christmas kind of shopping era for me to actually get through, because there's so much stuff in it.
Now, Alex, you're planning on that one too, right?
I platinum the original. Mm. After I finish Final Fantasy VII, I'm gonna go through and do the DLC and then play through Miles Morales. I'm gonna wait for Spider-Man 2.
There'll be sales.
So many games already that I just am going to play through. So
fair enough.
Plus with the Switch 2 rumors, I'm like kind of waiting for an announcement. Not trying to buy too much game stuff right now. Just putting my money away to
spend wisely if it happens.
So we'll get there when we get there.
Yeah. I'm also shout outs for Baldur's Gate 3. Been playing that game with my wife sort of when we have the opportunity to. So there's another game that if you're looking for, you know, something else to like add on top of the list, the ever-growing list that we all have as gamers, then I can recommend that one as well.
I have heard good things about Baldur's Gate. I've only heard good things.
Yeah, I haven't heard anybody complain about it.
Yeah. Well, let's go to our question of the day.
Yes, our question of the day. We actually had three to choose from. Because of kind of how we expect this episode to go, we're going to stick to just answering one of them today. So we'll get the other two eventually. But today from Qualthorn, we are going to answer, what is the first game you ever played or remember playing, at least?
Mine, I'm pretty sure it was Pokemon.
Like Red?
I think it was Pokemon, yeah. Because, like, my introduction to video games was from my dad. And, you know, actually, I should have asked him before this episode. He would probably be able to tell me exactly what my first video game was. But my very first memories of it, though, like, real, I remember playing that game is Ocarina of Time. Going over to my dad's apartment when we lived in Japan, we'd play Ocarina of Time and stuff. I'm just not sure in my mind whether that came before or after I had my own little Game Boy Advance and I was playing, you know, Pokemon games on that. But great memories.
Christian, what about you?
Well, for me, my earliest game memories are actually me like watching other people play games or like interacting with it. Like, I think the earliest game memory I myself have was like I was like 5 or 6 years old in Sweden watching one of my cousins play Final Fantasy IX, like the little jump rope minigame for like an hour. And I thought to myself, like, oh, that seems super, super boring.
Yeah.
And so definitely will never get into that or go on a podcast about it. For serious answer, probably it might be something on the GameCube that we like rented, because that was for sure our first ever system.
Okay.
And I think we did have a Game Boy Color, so I think I'm going to lock my answer in at like the Donkey Kong Country adaptation they did for the Game Boy Color.
Okay. Alex?
You know, I honestly can't remember. I remember watching my dad play Wind Waker. I can't remember if I doubt that I actually played it. He would like the way, I mean, I feel like all dads do it, but when he was playing, he would just give me another controller that wasn't plugged in and tell me that I was playing, you know?
Yeah. We all do it.
I have faint memories of some other Star Wars game on the GameCube, but again, can't remember if I actually played it. Like the two earliest games that I remember I played was Pokemon Pearl on a DS or Wii Sports. We got a Wii for Christmas one year, and Wii Sports was sick.
Yeah, Wii Sports is... That's a good game.
Yeah, second, honestly.
Second best, you know, console tie-in ever.
What do you think is the best?
Astro's Playroom. We talked about this. Right. It's the best console tie-in game ever. Anyway.
Unironically, yeah.
I haven't played that, so I can't say.
It's so good.
All little references.
Oh, it's so nice. It's so nice. Yeah, there you go, Qualthorn. And from all our other listeners, we would love to hear your answers as well. Please feel free to send your answers in, either comment on our social media, in our Discord, or send an email to us. We like any and all engagement that we get from you guys.
I have a feeling after this episode, you guys will like run through the standard answers. But then after this very interesting game we're about to talk about, you'll get questions like, what is the meaning of it all?
Oh my gosh.
Why are we here?
So speaking of which, so today we're talking about Nier Automata, and just to give a quick rundown of the setting of the game, what it's like, and Christian, feel free to interject whenever if you have anything to add. So the setting is a post-apocalyptic world. Humanity is not on Earth because aliens have invaded Earth and humans have been forced to escape to the moon. So you've been told that what's left of humanity is on the moon. You play as an android, which is basically, it's a humanoid robot. They look like humans for, if you weren't told that they were robots, you'd think that they're just humans, you know. But your job is to wipe out the machines on Earth so that humans can leave the moon and come back to Earth. That's kind of where the game starts. It's an action adventure game. And as soon as you start the game, you're just thrown right into action, and you kind of find out more about the story as you play through the game.
Yes, yeah. One of the biggest aspects of the story is this sort of looping replayability. Like, you reach the end, you hit the credits, and suddenly when you jump back in, there's more content beyond that. So replaying the game, re-experiencing the story, but from new perspectives, that's a really big aspect. There's a lot of RPG mechanics and customization that go on top of that core action hack and slash gameplay. Yeah. That's really, really fun to toy around with, and they let you do some stuff that...
Your little plug-in chips and stuff,
The plug-in chips, yeah.
Yeah, so you can, you know, it alters your attack, your defense, you know, can give you certain little abilities and stuff, really cool stuff. So that's the game. And this is a quick disclaimer for everybody. I know, so I'm going into this, like wanting to give you my genuine review of the video game and the kind of impact that it's had on me. And I want as many of you to play this game as possible. I strongly recommend it. But there is a huge caveat with that, and it's that this is a rated M game. I know a lot of our listeners are family, friends, you know, a lot of you are teenagers. If you are not an adult, if you're a minor, I would strongly encourage you to talk to your parents about this game first if you are interested after listening to this episode. Because this is probably the deepest video game that I've played, and it had a really big positive impact on me, but it's a double-edged sword, and I can see how somebody could play this game and have a really hard time, especially if you struggle with depression or anxiety, things like that. This game might make that worse. So I would advise you to talk to your parents, have them do research, get their permission before you dive into this.
Right. And I just want to give another example on this. So I haven't actually played the game myself, but I know a good deal about it. And the first time that I was exposed to this game was I was in an AP language class, and we were instructed to write an essay, you know, analyzing a story's themes, just basic stuff. And the student's essay that I was given to peer review was about this game. And like his reaction was like spiraling depression. Like it was very, very hard for him to take. And so I just, you know, want to echo that. Like, I know that some of these words may seem extreme to talk about how much of an impact it can have. But I think even as someone who hasn't played it, I've seen that happen to people. And, you know, both of these guys are very, very passionate about this game and the impact that it's had. So yeah, just be cautious, be ready for what you're getting into when you're deciding whether or not to play this game, because it's going to do something to you.
Yeah.
It's going to do something no matter what you do. So
the very first lines, in fact, are, I pulled them up here for reference. Everything that lives is designed to end. We are perpetually trapped in a never-ending spiral of life and death. And yeah, that's kind of the general vibe you're going to get through like 90% of this game. So it's with a purpose. It's not deep because it talks about sad things and is just overly depressing. It does those things. It covers those topics with the point of trying to explain, like, you know, in a video game of all things, why we can find happiness even in the midst of tragedy and in the sense of, you know, the uncertainties we have in our life. And so
it's definitely worth it,
but it's not an easy emotional journey. So
yeah. And it's because of the sad things that take place in the game that makes the little bit of hope that you find so meaningful and valuable. So before we get into the our review portion of the game, we're gonna review aspects of the game out of 10. Christian has done some research on Yoko Taro. He is the creator of the game. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about him.
He's
kind of a weirdo, right?
He's a very eccentric guy. If you just Google his name, Yoko Taro, and go to Google Images, you'll see a man wearing a full head covering mask of like a smiling skull.
Yeah, maybe we can throw an image of that up here.
Right, yeah. Now,
but
yep.
just a real looker of a guy. And he's, you know, he said it's just because he feels like really awkward giving interviews. Like, he doesn't feel like he's like a personality, ironically enough. Like, he's someone who like very much is more comfortable working behind the scenes in a creative capacity rather than, you know, going out there like Steven Spielberg and being the guy mm-hmm. who makes art. So he's someone who approaches game design, I think, in a very unique way, where he never approaches games from the perspective of what kind of gameplay do I want to implement or what kind of story do I want to tell. He had a GDC conference, and he said this in interviews as well, that he focuses first on the emotions that he wants to hit in his storytelling. Like, you'll start with an emotional conclusion and then write backwards from that. And it's like, okay, I want to have like a happy ending, and I want it to look like this. And so to get there, we're going to have to get, you know, steps D, which needs C, which needs B, which needs A. So a very unique way of structuring these games. That's very
interesting. Because I feel like most developers start with, okay, I want this gameplay, so how do I make the story match this gameplay, or vice versa? You know, where you start with the story and then you build the gameplay around that. Usually not a, okay, what emotion do I want to convey at the end of the game?
Right. Or even in the case of, like, you know, there's a lot of really big storytelling games out there. Even if they approach it with, we're going to tell this story and then fill in the gameplay, you know, the bosses and the levels after the fact, it's usually, you know, with a narrative purpose in mind, not like an emotional one, which is really what's different here.
Yeah.
He's a guy who's experienced a lot of, like, difficulties in his life where he's kind of taken a really introspective look. When he was a young man, he had a childhood acquaintance, like, die, and he, like, slipped and fell off of a building. And so, but he said he always looked at that as, like, how absurd, you know, like, this is someone I knew, and they, you know, took one small slip, and there they went. One of the games he made before the one we're talking about today, the actual prequel to Nier Automata, just Nier, or if you're a PlayStation 4 owner, you can play it on the Nier Replicant version. He said that game was directly inspired by 9/11.
Oh, really?
In the sense that where it was like, wow, like, America and the Middle East, like, these two massive groups of people with such different beliefs, like, coming to absolutely, you know, despise one another. And he's like, how do people get to that point? And that's really where the themes of the first Nier come into play, is like, how do you get someone, just like a father, a son, a woman, a man, and get them to the point where they're like, I absolutely despise this group of people and I want to absolutely annihilate them. So this guy, not your typical game developer, all that having been said, like, he loves, like, the eccentric, he loves putting in the dark aspects of life into games, but still having them be fun. Like, he's got a very eclectic, like, taste in games. Like, he loves Ikaruga, he loves text-based adventure games, he loves action games, he loves fantasy, he loves sci-fi, and all of those things, as weirdly disparate as they all sound, do show up in Nier Automata. Or Nier Automata, sorry. I'll get that right.
Yeah, that was one of my first impressions of the game, is that there are so many different genres kind of crammed into one action-adventure game, which made it stand out a lot.
One thing I'll kind of just tack on to this sort of background to the game. Yoko Taro's games infamously never really sold that well. Like, his highest selling game before Nier Automata was the first Nier, which sold 500,000 copies. And you can probably imagine why, as I'm describing it. Like, a lot of darkness, a lot of kind of like weird genre mashups, and a deliberate kind of bucking of traditional gameplay conventions for the sake of, like, an emotional beat.
Yeah.
So, for Nier Automata, he, like, partnered with Platinum Studios, the people who brought you games like Bayonetta, and deliberately went to them specifically so that they could have fun gameplay this time.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, so, okay, you know, kind of like a peanut butter chocolate match made in heaven. It's like the guys who made Metal Gear Rising and Bayonetta and all these super intense action games with the guy who, you know, wants to delve into the darkness of the human soul.
Okay, so Replicant wasn't, Nier Replicant wasn't with Platinum then?
No, okay, it's much more like spam magic from a distance in that game.
Okay.
Whereas this one, we'll get into the gameplay stuff, is what this game does special.
I've heard from multiple different places that the Nier Automata is considered the superior one for sure. So, oh,
yeah. Having played both, yeah, I'd say that's an accurate read.
Okay, well, let's rank it out of 10. Gameplay. What do you think, Christian?
It's difficult, because I'm the kind of guy where it's like, what is a 10 out of 10, like, piece of gameplay? I feel comfortable putting it at, like, a 9. Like, the gameplay is extremely solid, lots of customization, different weapons, different movesets, different gameplay styles. But it's not, I would say, maybe the best at any of the things it does. Like, the gameplay is super fun, but if you were to play like Devil May Cry or Bayonetta, you'd probably find like more sophistication and more, you know, expressive combat there than there is in Nier. It's exceptional in those cases, whereas in Nier Automata, it's more like you've got solid fundamentals. You're doing everything right, but not the absolute best.
Yeah, I think part of the reason is that it mashes so many different genres of gameplay together. Mm. Just for example, when you first start the game, you're on an auto-scroller. It's like Star Fox, pretty much. And this isn't a big spoiler because in the first 5 seconds of the game, you know, you see this, you're in a ship. And you're shooting down enemy ships and stuff. And after that, it turns into like a 3D, you know, think kind of like Kingdom Hearts, Bayonetta in terms of gameplay, like your hand-to-hand combat stuff with a sword, I guess. And then it'll shift perspectives, and then that will suddenly become 2D. And then it's a side-scrolling action kind of situation. And so it goes back and forth from those things a lot, and there's even times in the game when, you know,
the screen will fade to black and you'll have like different, it'll become a choose your own adventure kind of story section almost.
Yeah, so there's a lot. I really, really want to give this 10 out of 10, but I think objectively speaking I would also give it a 9 out of 10, just because I think that the main combat, of course, is the when you're walking around in the overworld, you're defeating enemies, that 3D combat. If that had a little more sophistication, I think I would give it a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
But as it is, it's still fantastic. I absolutely love it. Really the closest thing I can compare it to is like that I've played is probably like Kingdom Hearts. But even that is not quite... you know,
right, because there's a bit more, you know, like there's even more of an RPG emphasis in Kingdom Hearts.
Yes Yeah, so yeah, 9 out of 10 from both of us. Story I'll go first and just say I think this is 10 out of 10. I think I've talked about this before, but in my mind I don't ever want to not give a video game 10 out of 10 on any category unless I can think of if they did this and this and this, it would be better.
Right.
I can't think of a single thing they can do better to tell the story better. But what do you think?
I totally agree. Yeah. 10 out of 10, 11 out of 10 if it's an option.
Yeah.
Just because it not only doesn't make any missteps and it doesn't need any like... additions where it's like, oh, we really needed another chapter here with this character or a side quest over here. Like, it tells exactly the story it needs to with no fluff. But even beyond that, outside of just general storytelling quality, it gets extra points for me just for the uniqueness of the story it's trying to tell. Like, it's a very... like the best comparisons, you'd have to go to like classic cinema or like literature for the kind of story that Nier Automata is trying to tell.
Yeah.
And the themes it's touching on, like, you know, as someone who is half Swedish, like we're, you know, bound by Swedish law to at least see one film from Ingmar Bergman. And so like, if I was to like, oh, what would be a good, like, you know, if I played Nier Automata, it would be a good companion thing if I really like the story. And if you asked me that question about Zelda, it would probably be like, oh, here's this other, you know, like family-friendly adventure, like movie or show. And then for Nier Automata, it would be like The Seventh Seal, probably. You know, that kind of thing. So not only is it an exceptionally well-told story, points for going to territory into places that, gosh, very few games would go to, and certainly not of like this budget with like high octane gameplay. Like maybe if there's like an indie game on Steam where you like wander a sad graveyard in black and whites and click on things in a menu, maybe maybe there's a game like that that does the same stuff.
And I think that's the thing though, right? Is that it's the story and gameplay are so inherently intertwined, more than I've ever seen in any other game I've played before. And like, I don't know, I think less so today, but there's still the stigma around video games that it's video games, you know, it's just boys playing video games and, you know, it's silly nonsense, you're wasting your time. Anybody who has played this game, I shouldn't say anybody, I guess everybody can have their own opinions, but I think would tell you otherwise. And it's because of the integration of story within the gameplay that it allows you to be immersed so well. And the story, you know, is conveyed to you so effectively. So
yes. To that, actually, I would add another game that I absolutely love is The Last of Us. And as a point of comparison with Nier Automata, I'd say both games have, for me, 10 out of 10 stories. But the difference is with The Last of Us, like, I feel like if you watch the HBO, like, streamed miniseries with Pedro Pascal, you're going to get that story, like, told very similarly with maybe some differences, but the quality is overall one-to-one, and they translated that story very well. It's funny because there's an anime coming out for Nier Automata right now. They've apparently, from what Estia has told me, had to make a lot of changes already just because the way the story is told in this game is very reliant on it being a video game. So,
yeah, if this game is turned into traditional media like anime or movie or whatever, it, you know, it'll still, I think, tug on your heartstrings a little bit, but it will never reach the same kind of experience that you'll get from playing the video game. So next up is soundtrack. What do you think on that one, Christian?
If this game had a basic trope-filled cliched story about the power of friendship or whatever, and it was just anime androids fighting alien machines for 20 hours, but it kept that soundtrack, I would still be gushing just as much about it. Yeah, I'd say soundtrack 10 out of 10. Like, it's difficult for me to even listen without those memories just, like, roaring back and, like, filling me with that same, like, tear-welling, you know, feeling.
Yep. And sorry, Alex, stop us or comment on whatever if you feel like. I agree. Definitely 10 out of 10. There are certain songs. So, like, sometimes when I'm working, I listen to this soundtrack, and there's a lot of different video game soundtracks that I listen to. But there's a few songs that I exclude from my playlist because the first time I accidentally played those songs while I was working, I started tearing up, and I can't really be crying while I'm working. So, like, the music itself is so beautiful and brilliant and exciting. And let me just first say that for the longest time, I have believed that Kingdom Hearts 2, like, battle themes and boss themes are peak video game battle themes and boss themes. Like, I've held that belief for the longest time. As much as I love Zelda, Kingdom Hearts is just, like, combat music just really gets me going, and I absolutely love it. But Nier Automata tops that, like, easy. And that's really hard for me to say. The only other time that I've felt like, oh my goodness, this might beat, like, combat music from Kingdom Hearts 2 was when I played Final Fantasy VII Remake. That has crazy good music, too. Both of these games are from Square, so that tells you something. But
it's funny because, like, the Final Fantasy VII song is One Winged Angel, and I don't think you've gotten to the section where they actually do their version of it.
No, I haven't even heard that, no. Even just like the normal Let the Battle Begin
You're talking about Let the Battle Begin.
Like, holy crap.
It's... No, you shared with me recently, and I've done the same thing where, like, you don't want the music to end. So like, there have been times where I've just, like, kind of run around, like, a battle area so that I can, like, keep the music playing instead of actually fighting
you
the enemy.
You just take your time, yeah.
Just to hear the song. Just
it's
to hear
so
it.
It's so good, because everything is, it's all orchestrated. It's so good. And another thing about the soundtrack is that as you play through the game, when certain events happen or when you complete certain side quests, there are certain songs tied to that side quest that'll play. There's been times when I've completed a side quest and you realize you just helped somebody that was really sketchy and questionable. And at the end of it, you're like, wait, what? That's what you wanted? And then it'll start playing like really eerie, like creepy, unsettling music. So it really helps you feel what you just did. And other times when you help, you know, you help a younger sister get back to her older sister because she was lost, and as soon as you complete that side mission, there's this really adorable music that plays in the back. Or you went to go find a little music box for somebody that had lost one that was looking for it because they were emotionally attached to it. And then when you deliver it to that person, the main theme that plays in that area keeps playing, but it transitions to a music box version of it. It is just so well done that, and it's why when you go back and listen to the soundtrack without playing the game, like as you listen to that music, it's going to, like, you don't really have a choice but to remember the experiences that you had in the game. So, yeah.
One of the things I'll throw on top of that, and everything spot on there, is that the game knows when to pull back on the music and to just let the scene play out in silence.
Yes.
And I'm thinking particularly about the scene where you go to the, there's a machine city in like the ruins of an area in the desert. When you first enter the inner sanctum there, no music, and you're just hearing what's happening there.
Yep.
And it was goosebumps, just chilling.
Yeah.
Like, incredibly eerie, incredibly effective. And so even when there's no music playing, the music's somehow still excellent.
Every sound played or not played is always intentional, and you can tell, and it works really well. I agree. So there you have it. Replayability. So, Christian, you touched on this a little bit. Do you want to start?
Yeah.
How would you rank it?
So it's tricky, actually, because my instinct is to also give it a 10 out of 10. But I feel like this I would put an asterisk on and say mileage may vary depending on preference.
Yep.
Just because I really appreciate how the story unfolds itself, where the endings in the game are listed alphabetically. So there's ending A, B, C, D, and E. Those are the main endings, and then there's like the rest
F.
of the alphabet. Yeah, are kind of like joke endings.
Well,
where it's like,
yeah, A through F are the
A through F. Yes, exactly.
Hey, this is SJ editing right now, and I just realized that I was wrong the entire time. It's the true endings are, like the canon endings are endings A through E, not F. So whenever I talk about like ending F being as like the true ending to the game, that's not true. What I mean is that it's ending E. That's like the real ending. So, thanks.
Yeah. But there's 26 different like end screens.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Technically,
yeah.
It goes from A to Z.
And technically, 20 of those are just like joke ones where it's like,
yeah,
in this part of the story, you're getting a mission and you can say yes or no. And if you say no to the mission, it's like fade to black. And so the world ended. Fast forward credits, ending W or whatever. And it's
right.
Just,
there's a lot of joke endings.
Which shows that the game does have a sense of humor, and it's not just like existentialism hardcore all the way.
For sure.
But the reason I put the asterisk there is that I really enjoyed going through, you know, beating, getting through to ending A, restarting, and then you get new content in ending B, and then you restart and play to a certain point, and then it gives you more new content. But that's coming from someone who loves to platinum, loves to play to completion, loves to see everything there is to see in a game. Mm-hmm. And so I can see someone else being like, you know, I have to play these levels again or these bosses again with very little changed in order to get to the actually new stuff. And so if you're someone who generally prefers to blast through a game in one sitting or to see everything just like put in front of you, then I can see replayability being lower for you. Me personally, I'd still say 10 out of 10 because it's like that, you know, new perspective you get every playthrough is like meaningful for me.
Yeah.
But I won't begrudge anyone who's just like, oh, I got to beat this amusement park boss one more time.
Right.
It's like, okay.
And I have heard that before, that some people have found it a little tedious. So for me, replayability is, it's difficult to define in this game because in my mind, getting endings like A through F
is one.
It was not repetitive for me, in my opinion. It wasn't very repetitive. And you're getting new things all the time. And so I consider like finishing the game once you get ending F.
Okay.
If you haven't gotten, if you've just gotten ending A,
you've completed at, like a quarter of the game.
Yeah. You really have touched the tip of the iceberg. So, I guess in the sense that if you consider, okay, the little bit of replaying that you need to do to get that additional content, then I'd say replayability is 10 out of 10 because every time you replay it, you're getting new stuff. But if you're looking at it kind of like how I am, where, well, one completing playthrough is endings 5 through F, then replayability isn't that great because after you get ending F, you know, unless you're somebody that likes to platinum and get all the different joke endings and stuff, then you may not necessarily want to go back and do everything. I would probably give this an 8 out of 10, I'd say, for me personally. I'm not the kind of person to platinum. I've never platinumed anything. I just don't do that. I don't really care for it. The only game I've completed 100%, I think, is Ocarina of Time. And Ocarina of Time is not that difficult to 100%. What?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I feel this may need to be like a debate episode, like SJ versus Alex. Wait, the value of platinums.
You haven't like 100%ed a Mario game. We went 100%ed Wind Waker together when we played that. We went through and charted every single island. We got every single item. We did every single quest. We got every single heart piece.
We did every single little side quest and everything? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, my bad.
Wind Two Waker. Game. But that's it?
Sunshine.
What
the? I have 100%ed
Mario
Sunshine.
Wait, not even Mario 64 or Galaxy then?
No.
Like, I'm not I'm not crazy on, like, 100%ing, like, every game I play. I definitely don't. But, like, that's nuts to me. Like, I don't know. I feel like that's definitely something that you would do. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just not like that, I guess. But, there is added replayability even after you get all the endings, because there's like three different like Colosseum areas that open up eventually.
Yes, they did introduce like a test DLC of strength for that. Stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
So if you just really love the combat, there is even stuff beyond the story there for you. I would still probably, even for considering the story as being endings A through F and then that being like one playthrough, I'd still give replayability that 10 out of 10 because there's no spoilers. There's one thing that makes replaying it more of a journey and more of an actual, like investment than it would be for any other game that you've, you know,
you're so fully right. completed you're and then come back around to.
But I also understand what if some, again, I'll keep that asterisk there. And it's like, if you get to that moment when you complete ending F and you hit this moment and you're like, oh, really? Okay, then I'm never touching this game again. I can see some people with their, you know, perspectives on why they play games, like that being something that's like a deal breaker for them in terms of replaying.
And you will have no idea what he's talking about unless you've gotten ending F.
Yeah, consider that, you know, extra incentive.
Okay, you've convinced me. I'd say 9 out of 10 now.
Woohoo.
Yeah. So it's really good. Art design. So I'll go first. The menus, clean, very nice. It fits the theme. Characters are designed really well. I think there's a lot of symbolism in how each character is designed.
Yes.
And if I explain what that is, it spoils the game for you. So I'm not going to.
Well, what one little like maybe tidbits that is non-spoilery, but can still illustrate how the character design interacts with the story. All the androids in this game have blindfolds or some sort of mask or veil as part of their like design aesthetic. Like maybe one character will have like hair in front of their face or a blindfold or a veil again. And it's like pretty cool looking. It's like a nice design choice, but it's also thematically important because in universe, it's like, oh, they don't, you know, you're technically playing as androids and they have sensors or whatever and they don't need their eyes.
It's actually a heads-up display.
Oh, that's right. So
it allows them to see more data when they put on their little... It looks like a blindfold, but they see through it.
Yeah. Yes. But in terms of like design aesthetic and how it interacts with the story, like there's a lot of emphasis put on which characters know specific pieces of information and keeping them in the dark, you know, keeping them blind to the truth.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where like the design is very sleek and cool and very fashionable, but there's also like intent behind it beyond just like, ooh, pretty.
Exactly. And I guess now that you mentioned that, this also isn't really a spoiler. There's also characters that have like face coverings. Mm. Like they don't have an eye covering, but they have a face covering. And that has its own meaning behind that as well. The voice acting is really good. For most like games with this kind of style, I prefer Japanese voice acting typically, so I switch the language. But I really like the English voice acting in this one. I didn't have any issues with it at all. It wasn't cringy. It was really, really good. Yeah. Especially considering the kind of things that these characters go through and having to enact that. I think they did a great job.
The voice actor for the lead character for this game, the one who's on the box, her name is 2B, which, already carries a bunch of philosophical, you know, baggage with it by naming your character that. The Japanese and English voice actors, respectively, both reported having like a very difficult time kind of getting into 2B's like emotional headspace because there's a lot going on with her and there's like a very fine line of emotionally distant, but feeling a lot of complicated emotions underneath the surface that the voice acting, even though it was difficult for them, does a great job of expressing.
Yeah, and I didn't realize what was going on. I didn't know that there was so much going on inside 2B's mind when I first played it. And it's your subsequent playthroughs that you start to realize, oh, that's why she's talking that way, or that's why she's doing this or that. And it really comes out in the voice acting. And, well, just one more thing, kind of going back to the replayability thing. Mm. Like, you do replay the game. So, like, once you get ending A, you're strongly encouraged to play again. And then you play from a different perspective, and there's completely different gameplay mechanics that get introduced. And also, even when you're going to areas that you've already been before, you're beating bosses that you've already beat before, one, your level is a lot higher, so it's a lot easier to defeat those bosses, so it's less tedious. And between those areas and bosses, you get additional like backflash cutscenes, kind of giving you pieces of information about what's happened in the past. So you start to figure out more of like what is going on in the world. And that kept me totally hooked. So it did that. That's kind of one of the reasons why it didn't feel repetitive, like at all to me.
Yeah.
There's also certain side quests that can only be completed from certain perspectives. So new things open up as you replay it and stuff. So, but yeah, back to art design, 10 out of 10.
One thing I'll give special shout outs to is, you mentioned the menu and the, HUD displays. Yeah. They're very minimalist. They're very sleek. They're very, unobtrusive. And I also really like that it's very simple. But one cool thing is that if you don't like them, you can also just choose to not have them at all, because the in-universe like minimap and objective marker and health display, that's all in-universe, where it's on that
It's on the blindfold.
It's on the blindfold.
So that's how you're seeing it.
Yes. So the way the characters are built, being androids, they have chipsets that will provide functionality. And those chipsets include, you know, heads-up displays, mini-map, objective markers, health displays. And you also use that same system for stat increases, new moves, movement speed, abilities like higher jumps. And if you don't have enough room, you're like, do you really need to see what your health is? You can get rid of that and give yourself more damage.
Yeah.
And it's very fun that level of freedom is like, imagine if you had a Zelda game where it's, you could have an extra bottle if you couldn't see how many hearts you had left. Like, yeah. That's a really interesting trade-off.
Yeah. It's so cool that the menu itself is a part of the game. You know, it's all intertwined. So there you have it. Those are kind of the main categories we want to talk about: gameplay, story, soundtrack, replayability, and art design. This game basically passes with flying colors. So now this is kind of our time to talk about what this game is about. There's a lot of philosophical things that brings up. I'm not really sure where to start this, if I'm being honest. Do you guys have any ideas?
Well, before you guys get into that, like, I just think we need to have a clear understanding of how much you want to share. Because, right, like, you want to encourage a lot of people to play this, and there are probably certain things that would be nice to be left in the dark, you know, that people wouldn't be aware of before playing.
That's true.
So, like, that's just something to consider and kind of... come to an agreement on before you dive into anything. That way nothing is shared that you wouldn't.
That's true, because there's
to be shared,
there's definitely themes that are brought up that are more impactful when you discover it.
There's a full understanding.
Yeah
So we'll keep it light on like specific like plot stuff. Like I think it's pretty safe territory to say like here's like your core cast or whatever, but like what their deal is and why they're doing what they're doing will probably be scarce on details about.
Yeah.
If I may, I can, I can pull out my tweed sweater and my little pipe and like go all philosophical on y'all.
No, please, please do. Yeah.
So this game is heavily existential, is how I'd put it. And existentialism is a distinct philosophy concerning the big questions of the universe and, like, what is the meaning of life? And existentialism as a philosophy basically posits that there's no one meaning to life that we're all trying to work towards. And instead, every person individually finds some thing that maybe to the rest of the world and to everyone else doesn't mean anything, but is their reason to exist. And so, you know, we all exist first, and then we find meaning in our existence to keep going. Because life's hard. And so a lot of this game is structured around this, again, this war between androids and these alien machines and trying to get humanity back home. And a lot of the struggles of the characters involve their understanding of that conflict as, you know, that central premise starts having wrenches thrown at it. And how those characters come to grips is part of what makes the story so, like, powerful. Is this, it has a very specific philosophical approach, and it's fun to see how the game makes references to that, because a lot of the characters in the world are just named after philosophers.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, so there's a character named Pascal after Pascal's Wager, the famous philosophical defense for belief in God, and that very much fits Pascal as a character in the game, where they're a character who is very optimistic and who wants to believe in, like, you know, the good in people, and like is working towards like reconciliation and peaceful coexistence.
And I'd say too that a lot of the game is, there's also a lot of like, okay, so each, you know, individual group of people, they have their belief systems, their reasons to keep going and choosing to like live life, you know? Okay, well, what happens when that is completely shattered?
Yes.
When that is, when what you believed is true, or what you thought would happen is completely taken away, shattered, and it's, you know, you find information that completely destroys, you know, your reason for existence or reason to live. What does each person decide to do? And you see multiple decisions, I think, throughout the game take place.
Yeah. In big ways and small ways.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Obviously, we're making references to, like, the main story, but there's dozens of side quests that will touch on this. I think one that I'll touch on is there's a little side quest chain where it's, you know, it's Koopa the Quick from Mario, where you're just like, you gotta race this little robot to the finish line.
Yeah.
But like, as you continue that quest chain, you realize like, that's all this guy's life is. And you, like, it brings this like silly little gameplay side quest into a focus through the dialogue you have with this little robot about like, what does it mean to devote your existence solely to beating other people in races and being fast?
Yeah.
It's very funny to see that very simple, goofy gameplay premise put into a, but no, what if this was your life's meaning, really?
Right. And I mean, I'll let you guys find out what happens when you, because the point of the game is to like win and beat things, right? So obviously your objective is to like go from point A to point B quicker than this little robot can. And so when you do that, okay, sure, like you've beat him, but you've also
removed his reason
for existence.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like if he can't be the fastest thing around anymore, then, you know, what does he do? And
how he answers that question leads into further side quests, and again, it's all very intentional and very funny, but in a way that's like, but wait, what does this mean in the context of the other characters?
Right. There's also a lot of religious references in this game. And it's not, I don't really see the game as, like, I could see some people playing this game and thinking that it's an attack on religion, or it's an attack on, you know, like, truth, if that makes sense. Because, like, there's multiple different viewpoints and quote-unquote truths in the game. And so I think one thing that the game, a question that the game poses to the player is, how could one individual possibly know the truth of everything when your perspective is so limited? And so when it's impossible to understand how everybody else in the world feels, how could you possibly have the truth, right?
Yeah.
Which could be taken as a threatening thing for religious individuals like me, but it felt more of a, you know, a what if for me, right? And so after playing this game and thinking about all the different things that I experience in the game, you know, I thought about my own religion and thought about, you know, well, what if this isn't the one way, right? And I just had that dialogue in my mind. I wasn't saying, okay, well, I don't believe in God anymore, right? But it was a healthy exercise for me because it made me think about, well, why do I believe that I know the truth? Why do I believe in God or deity or whatever? And, you know, that helped me identify, well, it's because of this that I've experienced before. It's because of this and this and this. And the game even gives you, you know, it contradicts itself in the game because, like, on the surface, a lot of the game is telling you that there's, the world is just a whole lot of hopelessness and a lot of meaninglessness and sadness and misery.
There's a lot of destroyed ruins from humanity's past in this game. That's like 90% of the aesthetic of this game is destroyed city, destroyed docks, destroyed desert town. Like, but at the same time, there's this sense of like, you know, life persisting beyond that. And like nature, forests overtaking old cities, you know, animal, wildlife interacting where before it was just machines and humans. And to your point, I think what this game does is sort of, for me at least, provide a reassurance that even if you don't know everything, even if there's things that, because of your perspective, you're limited from, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be hopeless. Like the continuing search for new perspectives, the mindset of, you know, being curious, being humble and accepting of other viewpoints. It's not easy. Like everything I'm describing is a process for the characters in the game. And there's definitely some emotional breakdowns that are involved in that process of getting to that point of trying to come to terms with one's limited perspective and learning what to let go of and what to hold on to. But it's very fulfilling in a way that's like, if I hadn't gone through this, I wouldn't be as mature of a person. And I think that's like one of the things that's misunderstood about existentialism is that a lot of people go through life and say, well, if there's no one meaning to life, well, what's the point, really? But really what it means is like you need to find the things that really matter and like learn how to hold on to them even if that's not what is going to work for everyone else.
It really is like that hope that really keeps you going. And you see, like, sprinkled throughout this world that is, you know, in chaos and is totally destroyed, you see little bits of hope in different characters and the decisions that you make and the different endings to the game that you experience, especially, like, the final true ending.
Oof. Just thinking about it.
So I looked up after I finished the game. I wanted to hear other people's opinions on what they got out of the game and what their understanding was. And it was kind of all over the place, actually. I read a lot of people saying, this was like totally silly. I don't get it. You know, it was so repetitive, and not a big fan. And then I saw people say, I'm questioning everything about my life now.
It sent them into what Alex was saying, like that depressive spiral.
Yeah, exactly. And then I also saw other people say, this is like the greatest message of hope that I've ever experienced. And for me, it was like all of those things. But what stood out at the end is that hope, you know, and that's like, if you have hope, you can always keep going. And I think it's because our perspectives are limited that we ought to be hopeful. We ought to be understanding of other people's perspectives. And like, from our point of view, certain people might be bad guys. And from those bad guys' points of view, we might be bad guys. And like, depending on our upbringings and perspectives and cultures, that's going to vary widely. And so, just like you said, like, I completely agree that having played this game, my perspective on kind of life and the world and interactions with other people has completely like been magnified. Like, I can say for certainty that I am, or I at least like to think that I'm a better person having played this video game. And there's not, I can't really say that about any other game.
You heard it here, folks. Yeah. Want to be a better person. but it, jokingly, it does like speak to the ability of art to, you know, uplift us. Like the idea that someone's shared experience, even if it's from a guy in a weird skull mask who, you know, likes thinking about death in the context of like hot anime robots fighting each other. Like, that's very weird, but it shows that, like, even something that's, you know, put into a commercial art piece, like, that's still valuable and can still have meaning in our lives and change us for the better. So, yeah, 100%. This, I feel the same way, this game helped sort of expand my perspective and help bring me comfort in times where I've, you know, questioned myself, where I've had difficulties and struggles.
Any comments, Alex?
No.
There was something I was going to say, but I completely forgot it. So, kind of in closing, I just want to say again, I recommend this game strongly, but it is for a certain audience. You really have to be mature to play this game. And that's the thing, right? Is I think that's the part of the beauty of this game, is that you can choose to get out of it what you will. And that's why there are so many different opinions on the game. Is, you know, you can choose to like be in total despair after playing the game, or you can choose to be hopeful and find like more beauty in dark situations. And you need to have a developed enough mindset to be able to make those decisions as you play this game in a healthy way. So in my opinion, I think this game is for minimum, bare minimum, 18 and older.
What I would add on to that is make sure you're in a place where you are comfortable doing that, because having a paradigm shift, having an instance where someone's perspective of the world, truth, belief, all those things gets thrown into question, that can be unsafe for people in difficult situations. So definitely, and this goes true for any like dark or existential media, like make sure you're in the right mindset, make sure you're in a position where you want to seek these things out. Like, yes, I think this is a great video game, but you know, make sure you're doing right by you. And if it sounds like something too heavy or maybe even triggering for you in that instance, like, that's okay. I mean, that's part of the message, is that people's perspectives are valuable, even if they don't agree. And the only way we're making it through this life is if we do it with respect and understanding of one another. So, take it with the right mindsets, take it with the right level of emotional maturity, and I think you'll have a swell time.
Yep, I agree. Well said.
Swell time certified.
The whole reason why we started this podcast is so that Alex and I can share with you these precious gaming experiences and help you gain those experiences too. Video games, they're not just silly things. And this game even, well, I'm not gonna say anything about it, but this game in my mind is proof that video game as a media form is transformative. I mean, it's just like any media you have, right? Like TV shows and movies, there's bad ones and there's good ones. There's one that's good for you, ones that's bad for you. So anyway, here it is. Overall, I think this game is a 10 out of 10, 100%. I love this game. Thanks for listening. And thank you to our Patreon supporters. We've got Grandpappy, we've got Joshua, and then we also have Tyler. Thank you to all three of you. And thank you to everybody else for always watching and listening. Check out our social media page, our Discord especially. We like to, if you want to ask us the question of the day thing, you can post it in there, have discussions about video games.
And thank you to those of you that have started participating in that already. The growth has been pretty quick so far, and we're excited to see where that continues to go. So thank you for those of you who were early adopters of our request to be a part of our Discord and be vocal and a part of the community. And if you haven't yet, here's another reminder. Go ahead and check it out, because we're excited about what we're building in there.
And thank you, Christian, for coming. Absolutely. And we would love to have you on again.
Yes, for the Fire Emblem episode. I can't wait whenever that's happening. And I guess I'll sign off by doing the little slogan they do in the game as sort of their little rallying cry.
Yes.
Glory to mankind.
Thanks, guys.